Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hey there, friends, and welcome to my favorite time of the afternoon, getting to spend time with you, prescribing hope for healthy families. And it is Friday, or Fri-yay, as my kids like to say, and now my whole team says. It is Friday, so happy Friday, everybody, wherever you're going, whatever you're doing, working, driving, patrolling, serving, carpooling, whatever it is, if you are spring breaking, happy Friday. And we're here for Ask Dr. Nurse Mama Friday, and every Friday, I have been talking about 52 habits for healthy families. Now, each week we're focusing on a specific habit, and the first segment of the show, at least on Fridays, I'm talking about that healthy habit and answering common questions that I get surrounding that. Now, for the last almost 3 months, for the last 11, 12 weeks now, we've been focusing on rhythms in your family. And so often we're looking for that magic parenting hack, life hack, communication hack, something that gives us instant gratification. Whatever we're facing that's challenging in our family, you may be going through a season of struggle, or you may just be thinking, okay, life is just busy and it's good, but you know, it's stressful. And these simple rhythms are the building blocks of healthy families. And if you've missed any of them, you can go back and listen to the Dr. Nurse Mama Coaching Minutes. You can find them at AFR.net, on AFR's app, on any podcast platform. And you can catch up and just listen to 1 minute where I challenge you with the week's habit and thinking about the ways that you can stack these habits on each other. So as I said, since the beginning of the year, we've started with the basics. No family is going to be successful in today's world without prayer, without asking God for help. As Christian families, we really need to be praying more and to make prayer a rhythm in your day. It doesn't have to be a specific time going into your closet. We talked all about prayer, how to integrate that into your day. Memorizing scripture, standing on the truth of God's word. Week 3, we talked about going to church, connecting with a body of believers. Week 4, we talked about intentionally curating playlists that match the season of struggle, that match the season of victory that you're in, that reinforce what God is doing in your life. Week 5, we talked about gratitude and being intentionally grateful. Week 6, the power of a daily devotional. Week 7, morning routine, setting your family up for success during the day. Week 8, bedtime routine, setting them up for healthy sleep at night, giving them rhythms of connection. Week 9, we talked all things sleep hygiene, because sleep is so connected to our emotional, physical, mental, and spiritual health. Week 10, we talked about family dinners. And last week, we talked about weekly check-ins. Now, these are all tangible things that you are doing as a rhythm in your family throughout the week. And today, we're going to shift. We're going to have a little bit of a different focus. Now, this should be a rhythm in your life, but it also should be a communication tool. And we're going to start talking about how do we communicate with our families in ways that foster communication, that foster healthy relationships, that nurture healthy families. And the habit that I have for you this week is one that I feel very passionate about, and it's one that we are doing very poorly as a society. So you may be thinking, you know, I am not having such good communication at home right now. My teenagers won't talk to me, or my spouse and I, or, you know, we're just finding ourselves at odds and bickering a lot, or whatever it is. Here is the number one thing that I want you to think about. Are you ready? I feel like, again, I've got to have some sort of drum roll. So you just imagine a drum roll in your head. But this week's habit is life-changing. It is, I know, I'm drawing this out. Just tell us what it is, right? I will tell you what it is. I want to make sure you're paying attention. Are you listening with your face? Listen with your face. With your face, not with your ears. Listen with your face. I want to ask you a challenging question. How often do you really listen to the people you love? beyond just hearing their words. We all know we've been there. I'll pick on the guys for just a second. You may be watching a sports game, or hey, maybe even it's the girls who are watching a sports game. Whoever it is, right? You're into it and your loved one comes up and they ask a question. You're trying to watch the game and you say, I heard, and they say, you're not listening to me. And then what do you usually do? You usually repeat back everything that they just said so you can prove you were right, you were listening. But they're not telling you you're not listening. That's not really the message they're giving you. What they're saying is, I don't feel heard or seen. I don't feel like you're listening to me. Maybe you did, you can check the box, but I don't feel that connection. And what a gift for them to tell us that. What a gift to have that message, because it should be a trigger to say, okay, we need to pause, we need to pivot, and we need to listen. So let's talk about what it means to listen with your face, to engage in active listening through nonverbal cues. We're talking eye contact. We're talking facial expressions. We're talking body language, because we may say, I'm listening, but my arms are crossed. My head is tilted to the side in a posture of skepticism. I am shaking my head. I'm clucking my tongue. I'm rolling my eyes. All the while I'm saying, I hear you. I hear you. I heard exactly what you said. We need to listen with our face. So let me ask you a question. How often do you truly listen to the people you love with more than just your ears? Listen, in a world full of distractions, we forget how powerful it is to listen with our face. To show that attention and empathy through eye contact, through our facial expressions, through our body language. It's not just about being present and saying, I'm using my ears. It's about fostering connection. Research shows that active listening, including the nonverbal cues, which is the majority of the communication we have, it releases oxytocin, which is actually a bonding hormone, 20 seconds of eye contact. God is so good to have given us a built-in biological advantage. So if you're thinking, I'm not sure how to connect, give them good eye contact and God will help you. God rewards those small little acts of faithfulness by giving them a loving look, a concerned look, a caring look. For 20 seconds, you're going to have a release in their brain that says, okay, I'm here, I'm listening. That strengthens relationship and that builds trust. And the verse this week that I am memorizing, I encourage you to memorize too, is James 1:19. We are reminded everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. Quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to become angry. I'm telling you, if we all could just take that advice and take that to heart, it would greatly go far in helping to solve any of the relationship problems that we're having, because this is where so much communication conflict arises. So this verse encourages us to be fully present, to listen attentively. We have two ears and one mouth. We should listen twice as much as we speak. We actually should listen about 10 times as much as we speak. But don't just listen to the words. Listen to the emotions behind them. We have to take time in our daily interactions to put down the distractions that compete for our attention. Maybe that's a phone. Maybe that's a screen. Maybe that's a calendar. Maybe it's work. It's multitasking, which, by the way, multitasking is a lie. And believe me, I know how soul-crushing that statement is, because I am a recovering self-professed multitasker. Multitasking doesn't work. I'm trying to embrace that truth in my life. But we need to focus on our loved ones. Show them that we care by giving them our full attention. So I'm going to challenge you here at the beginning. How can you be more intentional about listening with your face this week? How can you create deeper connections and trust in your relationships and give your family the gift of your beautiful, precious face? Emphasize the power of these nonverbal cues. We have to understand that power. in deepening communication and fostering our connection with our families. So let's talk about the disconnect. Why are we so disconnected as a society? I think we're more disconnected than at any point in modern human history because we have the rise of screen-based communication. Smartphones, social media, texting, it just leads to less face-to-face interaction. And I'm not giving any commentary about celebrities or I'm not saying anything about any virtues of any celebrities, but I did hear an interview with Nicole Kidman recently. She was talking about her husband. She's married to country music star Keith Urban. And the interviewer was asking her how they maintain communication. And she said, the rule that they have is that they never, ever text each other. And I thought, wow, that's actually pretty revolutionary. I can't imagine a not texting. That's so easy to do. But she said, and I did agree with her on this, that the tone can be misinterpreted, that things can be lost when you're talking about text messaging. And so they made a practice of just talking to each other themselves. Now that, again, that may just be something that you think, okay, well, that's not practical for us, but what is it in your communication that you need to adopt? I think that we really need to think about how much we rely on screen-based communication, and it does impact us. It really does. We also have busy schedules. We have distractions, and those things just make a cultural shift. And when we have so many digital conversations, they just lack that emotional nuance of good face-to-face communication, being able to see how they're responding in real time. That is really, really helpful. And some of those consequences, we feel isolated. We feel emotionally distanced because we're communicating with our face through a screen and not face to face. It makes it harder to read those emotional cues when you're texting. Or, you know, sometimes I will text my husband emojis, and anytime I text him an emoji, he will just text me back and say, I don't speak emoji, please use words. And I'll have to tell him, okay, this is what I mean, because he doesn't want to misinterpret what I am saying. And that can be so misinterpreted because we're not designed to communicate that way. And it can be difficult. We need face-to-face communication. It strengthens our relationships. We need eye contact. They need to see us nodding and smiling and using open body language. We need to sit down and show that we're not rushed. One of the things that I started doing with my kids, if they started a conversation with me in the car, if it was somewhere where we had time and I could pull over safely, I would pull into a parking lot and say, hold on just a minute. I want to give you my face. This sounds really important. And that may be a phrase that you adopt with your family. Hold on, I want to give you my face. This is important. Let me give you my full attention. Let me give you my face. That is a gift that we can give our kids and our family members who need to feel valued and heard. Like, this is important enough that I have your full attention. So again, you know, looking at the way our brains release oxytocin, the bonding hormone, looking at the way our nonverbal communication helps us to pick up on those subtle emotional cues. Those are all critical, and they help build security and safety. And if we regularly have eye contact and physical presence, that activates neural pathways in our brain that are associated with attachment. It reinforces emotional bonds within our family. In a world full of digital communication, I'm challenging you, I'm urging you, I am pleading with you to prioritize face-to-face interaction where your relationships can thrive. Because again, I get it. As parents, as busy spouses, just living in a modern world, it is easy to get caught up in that distraction. Constant phone alerts. If you look at how many times your phone alerts during the day and you reach for your phone, social media updates, the pressure to stay connected 24/7, even when we're off work, we're not off work, and the hustle of our busy lives, we unintentionally shift our focus away from our families, even when we're physically present. So I want you to ask yourself, are you fully engaged when someone is talking, or is your attention divided by the ping of a new notification? How often are you looking at your screen at the dinner table when someone's trying to share their day? Have you found yourself distracted by your phone when your spouse or your child is speaking? It's not that we don't care, but how can we consciously put down our device, be fully present, and listen with our face? When we come back, I'm going to talk to you about two of the biggest challenges to that, and that is nomophobia and phubbing, P-H-U-B-B-I-N-G. We'll talk about what is that on the other side of this break. I'll be right back. Because of the generous donations provided from listeners like you, Preborn has rescued over 330,000 babies. But every day, the abortion industry is taking thousands of babies' lives. We have to save them. Please donate your best gift to save more babies at preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR. As we celebrate the many pro-life victories going forth, we rejoice. Preborn's network of clinics have a unique opportunity to advance even further without political persecution. What does this look like? Preborn is the greatest threat to the abortion industry by rescuing, on average, 200 babies' lives a day. They are putting a serious dent into abortion, but there are still thousands of babies who die daily. And Preborn's goal is to rescue them all. With the help of the pro-life community, meaning you, we can save so many more. Please join us in saving all of these precious lives. The ultrasound is the game changer. Once a mother hears that precious heartbeat, she is twice as likely to choose life. If you consider yourself pro-life, we need your help. One ultrasound is just $28. Five ultrasounds are $140. $5,000 sponsors ultrasounds for the entire Preborn network for an entire day. How many lives can you save? Every child is a beautiful gift from God. Please join the cause. To donate securely, please dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby. Or visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR. Preborn is there for hurting mothers and at-risk babies, standing strong in the darkest corners of our nation. By sponsoring an ultrasound, you can be there too. One ultrasound is just $28 and doubles a baby's chance at life. Please donate your best gift to save more babies at preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
God only knows. God only knows what you've been through.
Welcome back, friends. That is God Only Knows by For King and Country. And God only knows what you're going through today. I pray that whatever you're going through, that the Lord will be with you and give you strength and give you people in your path who will speak words of life and encouragement to you, because God does know what you're going through. He sees and He cares. And on this Ask Dr. Nurse Mama Friday, I care about equipping you with healthy habits for healthy families. We are going through different habits, 52 habits, one a week, where we're talking about the building blocks of making our families stronger. You know, there are a lot of times where I get questions about the things that are impacting our families these days. There's a lot of fear involved in what's facing our families, what's facing our kids, what's coming to us in culture. And there are things that are definitely scary. And I see a lot of fads and a lot of desire for instant gratification. But I'm just here to tell you, don't let your heart be troubled. Believe in God that He has given you and equipped you with what you need for such a time as this. And one of the things that we need in such a time as this is to listen with our face. It is such a gift that we can give our family. Giving our families our face is a gift. And calling them by name, speaking to them by name, that is something that is really, really powerful. Let me just start with talking about the science surrounding the power of speaking our loved one's name, speaking their name with love, not in an irritated way, not in the my Southern granny kind of way where she's using my first name and my middle name. And then if I'm really in trouble, it's my first, middle, and last name. No, that strikes fear in my heart. I'm talking about Speaking your family member's name with love. The science surrounding the power of speaking a name, particularly in terms of attachment and emotional development and self-identity, is really fascinating. So here's some of the key findings of just speaking their name. Speaking a name reinforces the parent-child bond, and it strengthens attachment. When you say your loved one's names, it signals recognition and attention and affection. And someone who feels seen and valued is more likely to have trust in that relationship. It also gives them emotional safety and emotional security, which is a really beautiful thing. It also helps us to develop our self-identity. A child hearing their name spoken by their parent is linked to the development of self-awareness and self-identity. That is beautiful. Kids are learning about themselves and their value through their interaction with others, especially their parents. And when we say their name, it evokes a sense of self-worth and identity. Even infants will respond with a smile when we say their name. It's beautiful. Also, research on the brain's response to hearing your name, super interesting. MRI studies show that hearing your name activates regions of your brain associated with attention, memory, and emotional processing. Now, this can include something called the ventromedial prefrontal cortex for you science nerds out there. But these brain regions are really important for processing personal identity, for emotional experiences. It just helps reinforce their name of self and belonging. And studies on social cognition say that hearing your name makes it easier to engage socially because it calls them to action. It helps them to learn social cues. It also helps in positive reinforcement. When we say their name, when they do something well, it affiliates that brain response with that positive re-encouragement. So if you're saying their name, you did such a great job on your chores today. You showed such great character. Say their name. It can be really, really helpful for that. So just intentionally incorporating the use of your child's name, of your spouse's name even, during a positive, calm interaction really can be a boost to their self-worth. It is really amazing of what you can do with saying their name and listening with your face. Now, I talked before the break about nomophobia. This is one of the biggest things that prevents us from engaging, from pausing, from looking someone in the eye, saying their name with love, and listening to what they have to say. Because we have nomophobia, it has become a societal norm. Now, what is it? It's actually a psychological condition that most of us have today. I'm sorry to be the one to inform you, but here you are. It is an irrational fear of being detached or disconnected from your cell phone. I know you're thinking, oh, that's not me, but maybe you know it. You know that feeling of complete panic. You're walking through the airport, you're driving away from your house, you're walking somewhere at work, and all of a sudden you think, where's my phone? And you start feeling your pocket and you look in your purse and you realize, oh my gosh, my phone is gone. Where's my phone? Where's my phone? Where's my phone? Where's my phone? And yet, as parents, as a society, we will sanctimoniously fuss at our teenagers about how, oh, they're so attached to their phone. Oh my goodness, you need to get off your phone. And yet we feel that way. Now, of course, a lot of us feel that way because it's expensive and we don't want to lose it, but mostly because our life is on there. But we know that habits and attitudes are mostly are caught as much as they're taught. We have to intentionally teach them, but they're going to do what we do and not what we say. So here's some interesting research for you on nomophobia. 70% of people feel anxious without a smartphone connection. Maybe you even have your phone, but it's not connected. How many of you have been this person or seen this person that is walking around looking like a zombie, trying to hold your phone up, trying to find a connection? Nomophobia also correlates with poor sleeping, poor school performance. It's linked with neck pain, headache, thumb strain, and eye strain. Half of people with nomophobia show signs of phone or social media addiction. And young people ages 18 to 29 are at twice the risk of developing nomophobia. But I do have to give Gen Z a shout out because they are starting to push against having their phone. They are saying more often, and my own kids say this to me all the time, hang up and hang out. And I'm convicted to do that. But now that we all feel guilty, okay, I'm going to make you feel a little more guilty. So just take a deep breath and know that some tough love is coming. I'm going to speak truth with love. I'm speaking it to myself. But I want to ask you here, how much do you model nomophobia in your home? Here's some questions for you. Do you take your phone with you everywhere in the house? I'm talking the bathroom. I'm talking the shower. I'm talking it's strapped to your body 24/7 or at least however long you're awake. Here's another thing. Is your phone the last thing that you touch at night before you close your eyes? Is your phone the first thing you touch for, you reach for or touch in the morning? Do you have physical symptoms of anxiety if you are somewhere without your phone? Will you always turn around to go get it if you left it at home? Do you get anxious or panicky when your battery is low? Do you become hyperfixated when you don't have a signal and repeatedly check or move your position till you get one? Do you sit on the floor in an airport just to be close to a charger and not interrupt your phone use? And here's the hardest one. Do you put others' lives at risk to check your phone while you're driving? Ouch! I told you, I did warn you. This is so tough, but before we judge kids in the world today and shame their nomophobia, we really need to take inventory of our own. We have to admit it. We have a problem as a society being overly connected to digital technology. We need to intentionally choose in-person interactions over digital ones. We all do it. How often are you at home and you're texting somebody in the same house? You just don't even get up to go see them and talk to their face. You text them. My husband is very particular about this, especially don't text. Just pick up the phone and call. Just have a conversation. So ask your kids to call you out on it. Really, when you are having those signs of nomophobia, ask them to call you out. They will. Honestly, evaluate your phone use and think, is this a problem for me? Maybe you can intentionally leave your phone for short periods of time in small distances. Have a time where you check it in, a time where you say, between these hours, I am not going to be connected to my phone. Whatever that looks like, setting boundaries, taking breaks, finding balance, that can be difficult. And if you're really brave, what you can do is ask your family, what do you see about my phone use that frustrates you? What do you see about my phone use that seems unhealthy? Oh, and then put on your tough suit because they will tell you. Kids are remarkably honest, especially, and they will tell you. I mean, how many times have you caught yourself scrolling through your phone while your child is telling you something? You know, the time that I really noticed this is on social media trends. Actually, there's a whole series of videos where kids imitate their parents scrolling through their phones and not listening to them. And it's all, and they all laugh about it because it's a shared experience. And that can be really, really difficult. So when we look at that, how often, really look at yourself, how often do you find yourself distracted by your phone when your family needs your attention? Do you notice those moments where you, if you're really honest, you know you're not fully present during that family time? And we see this is expanding significantly in recent years. And what we're talking about is the second phenomenon I want to talk to you about is fubbing. That's P-H-U-B-B-I-N-G. It's phone snubbing. That's ignoring someone in favor of your smartphone or your device. It is growing because phones are a ubiquitous part of daily life. Like they're not going anywhere. And researchers are now exploring how fubbing is affecting individual well-being and relationships. So let me tell you a little bit about phone snubbing. Studies consistently find fubbing leads to decreased relationship satisfaction. They don't like the relationship. It's a constant source of tension and frustration and emotional intimacy. And when one family member feels ignored in favor of a device, it makes them feel neglected and lonely and insecure. Fubbing has also been linked to higher levels of relational conflict. A 2018 study found that frequent smartphone use during interactions increases arguments. It increases dissatisfaction. That is not surprising. It also increases loneliness, and they have higher levels of depression if people feel like they're constantly being phone snubbed. It also negatively impacts self-esteem, especially among kids or adolescents. When they feel ignored, when they feel unimportant, when they feel secondary to your phone, it's telling them what you really value. I know I'm speaking some tough truths. These are things that I struggle with. We are all struggling together, but we've got to be honest about this, because research also shows that children feel less emotionally connected to their parents when we are distracted by devices. And that is impacting communication. It impacts trust. It also shows using smartphones during family time, during meal time, and we're just teaching them those cycles that they are then going to repeat. It increases the risk of addiction, and the constant checking of our phones is compulsive. It honestly has become compulsive, and it makes it really difficult to disconnect during those face-to-face interactions, because we feel that movement of our hand to, oh, let me just check it. It's just compulsive. We don't wait for anything. If we're waiting for our oil to get changed, we automatically pull out our phone, and we miss the opportunity for so many rich in-person reactions. And workplace studies even show that employees who perceive that their colleagues or their superiors or are more on their phones, like during a work meeting, like, okay, I'm guilty of that for sure, they're more likely to report lower trust levels, feeling excluded. And this really comes to do with the neuroscience of distraction, because when we feel snubbed, it affects our ability to focus, and it decreases our ability to be empathetic. That multitasking that I told you is a lie, like checking a phone during a conversation, that is not multitasking. That's rude, okay? It reduces our cognitive processing power, our ability to think, and we're not present emotionally. And we cannot split attention between a person and a phone. We can't. The phone will win every single time. And it disrupts in that way secure attachments. And that is so saddening to me, because we need to be aware of that. We have an emotional impact. We have long-term impacts. We have our family members feeling neglected, lonely, dissatisfied with how much we're on our phone and not feeling like we're a priority, and damaging emotional bonds and trust. And yet we just say, yeah, we just hold on. We don't want to do that. It might happen at dinner. It might happen during family activities, when you're playing a game or watching a show together, when you're just talking. And there are strategies that you can do it. And we will talk about a lot of those strategies this summer when we go through our tech habits. But some of those are phone-free zones, phone-free times, putting your phone on Do Not Disturb. We'll talk about all of those specifics. But for today, for what I want you to concentrate on, it is just listening with your face. Can you listen with your face? And when we come back, we're going to talk about the way that you can do that. I'm going to give you my 4-step model for listening and communicating with your family members, and ways that you can make that better and have that communication as a healthy habit, because healthy communication is an essential family habit. And that begins with listening, active listening and engaging. Don't you want to strengthen trust in your family? Don't you want to reduce the misunderstandings? Oh, I misunderstood, because we're distracted and half communicating. Don't you want to feel closer and more connected to your family? Well, you can do that. You can be more intentional in listening with your face. When we come back, I'll give you 4 steps on how to do that. Don't go away. We'll be back with more on this Ask Dr. Nurse Mama. Happy Friday, and talking about listening with your face. It's revolutionary. Try it. I'll see you on the other side of this break.
Here's Dr. John Oswalt from the American Family Studios documentary, The God Who Speaks.
One of the remarkable things about the God of the Bible is that he is a God who speaks. The writers of the Bible again and again talk of him as the living God, and when they do, they include this idea that the idols are dumb. They cannot speak. Language is an incredible mystery, really. What is it that makes human beings able to communicate in word? Personally, I think that is the image of God in us, because God speaks. Right at the beginning of the Bible, God spoke the world into existence. It did not somehow evolve from his body. It was something that he spoke.
Visit thegodwhospeaks.org.
Welcome back, friends. That song is In Jesus' Name by Darlene Check. If you missed Darlene, she was a guest on the show on February 5th. You can go back and catch that replay. And she talked about her new devotional testament, which was really just so encouraging. And that's one of the habits that we've been talking about, is having cultivating a playlist to go along with your life. Are you feeling defeated? Cultivate a playlist that's about victory. Are you feeling depressed? Cultivate a playlist that's about joy. Surround yourself with messages. And one of the messages that you need to give your family, that your family needs from you so much, is that you love them enough to listen with your face. Here on this Ask Dr. Nurse Mama Friday, we're talking about the healthy habit of listening with your face. I'm dedicating whole time together, the whole show, to this concept, because I feel like this is something that kids want so badly. I've shared this before, but not too long ago, I did a suicide prevention event in a community. I spoke with hundreds of parents and with teenagers. And as the teenagers walked in, I handed each of them a post-it note, and we had a wall over on the side with the table. And I asked them, what do you want from your parents that you're afraid to ask for? What do you want from your parents, but you're afraid to ask for it? And, you know, the parents were really curious, and I was curious too, to see what it was, what all of the different things might be. But I was really shocked when I saw so many of those post-it notes, almost all of them had the same variation of, had a different variation of the same word, one word, and that word was listen. I just wish my parents would listen. Now, a lot of us as parents, we would say, I do listen to my kids. I would die for my kids. I would do anything for my family. But what they're saying is, I don't feel heard. Listening with your face is more than just hearing those words. It's about showing up with your full presence and making that other person feel truly heard and seen and known and loved and understood. I want you to think for a minute how much more meaningful a conversation becomes when someone is actively engaged with you, not just through their words, but through the expression on their face, maintaining that eye contact, nodding in sympathetic agreement, allowing your emotions to reflect what the other person is saying. It creates such a deep sense of connection. And in this world where distractions are endless, smartphones are buzzing, we are multitasking, the great lie, right? It's easy to half listen. But when we choose to engage fully, we're building trust, we're strengthening our relationships. It's not just about being polite. It's not checking a box. It's about being intentional and showing people they really matter. They really are a priority. I want you to imagine what might change if you go home this week and you make it an intentional practice when your family member is speaking with you to give them the gift of your face, to stop and say, "This sounds important," to look at them in the eyes, to pause, to put away the distractions, to listen with intention, to show empathy. You can do that. This is one of the things that really inspired me to write the book that I wrote, Behind Closed Doors, A Guide to Help Parents and Teens Navigate Through Life's Toughest Issues. And the first framework that I put together is actually a form of something I use in clinical practice called motivational interviewing. It's how do I get kids to tell me everything? And they do. Believe me, they do. It's taken me a long time to learn how to do it, but I want to teach you how to do it too. And it's just four easy steps. It's L-O-V-E. It's love. It's a way to love your family. And that L, let's start with, break it down. Four easy steps. L-O-V-E, starting with L. Listen with your face. Again, we often don't listen with our faces. Our faces are in our phones. And if you are saying, "I am listening," stop yourself right there and say, "Okay, I may be listening, but you don't feel heard." And resist the urge to parrot back everything they just told you so that you can prove yourself right. Commit to listening intently. Give your family the gift of your face. Make eye contact. Put your phone down. Make a big dramatic thing of it. Say, "Hang on, I'm going to go put my phone way over here so that it's not a distraction while we're talking. Let's go on a walk. Let's go sit outside. Let's go somewhere away from the distraction of a screen. I'm going to give you my face." Don't interrupt. Don't roll your eyes. Don't sigh. You don't like it when your kids do that, but we do it to them. Keep a neutral expression no matter what they share. And reflect back what they hear. So let them speak. Give them space to speak as much as you can. Just listen, 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 as hard as it is to do. And then as you're listening, reflect back and say, "What I hear you say is," and then say back to them what they say. That makes sure they do feel understood. Because so often one of the most common questions I get, no matter where I get, is how do I get my kid to talk to me? How do I get them to open up? This is how. You start with listening. You can't lecture your way to leverage behavioral change. It's not going to work. You can't argue your way into right relationship. Even if they're wrong, listening to their perspective, it lowers their defenses and it helps you to really build that bridge of communication. So L is listen with your face. O, offer open-ended questions. And when we hear things we don't like, things that we disagree with, we want to get angry, we want to lecture, and we just can't lead that way. We've got to ask questions. Let the first words out of your mouth be a question. Seek understanding. Gain trust. Don't ask yes or no questions. Don't ask rhetorical questions. Those are the worst. Like, "What were you thinking?" Or, "What did you expect me to do?" Or, you know, though there's no safe answer there. Ask questions. Say, "Tell me more about this. Tell me more about how that's making you feel. I'm not understanding this part of it. Can you explain it in a different way? Can you say it in a different way?" And it's so hard. And you may need to take a break. You may need to say, "Okay, I need a minute to process that. Can we take a pause and then come back and continue the conversation?" But let it be questions. "How are you feeling about that? What do you think is the best way to handle that? That seems like that's a big burden. How have you been managing that?" That's L-O. Now V, validate their feelings. Now they may be wrong. They may be wrong in their thought process. They may be wrong in their decision-making. But feelings in and of themselves are just feelings. So let's say that, you know, your teen doesn't study and they get an exam and they come home and they're really upset. Well, you could say, "Well, I told you so. I told you that was going to happen. You should have studied." Well, that's just piling shame on top of what the natural consequences they've already experienced. But if we can say, "Oh, I can see that's upsetting. That never feels good to get a poor grade on a test. I'm so sorry that you experienced that." And then just validating their feelings, and then you can move on to, What do you think you could do differently to set yourself up for success in the future? That's a way different conversation than I told you so, and you're not going to get into college, and I have had this conversation with you a million times, and when are you ever going to listen, and when are you going to learn? If that's your strategy, let me just ask you a gentle question, gently. How's that working? I would guess that's probably not working too well, but we know what they need to do. Sometimes the answer is so obvious to us, but it's not obvious to them. And we've got to validate their feelings in the moment. Like, I'm sorry this is making you sad. I'm sorry that you feel upset. I'm sorry you're frustrated. I'm sorry you're hurt. I'm sorry, or whatever that feeling is. That's really important. Don't sigh when they're talking. Don't fold your arms. Don't tilt your head with a look that says, really? Okay. And then say, I'm listening. I didn't say anything. We really need to have an open expression, a neutral posture, open hands, open eyes, and an open heart. Remember, Jesus had emotions. He got angry. He got scared. He got tired. He got frustrated. Emotions are human feelings that need to be named and claimed. And that approach helps you to address behaviors in a way that your family member can better receive. That is the key. We want to lower their defenses. We want to build trust in the relationship. And then E. So we've got L, listen with your face. O, offer open-ended questions. V, validate their feelings. Just recognize it. And E, explore next steps together. So once you see that, once you have had that conversation, they have felt seen, they have felt heard, they have felt understood, then they're going to be more likely to have a conversation with you. And that can be really, really hard. And I encourage you to pray about this, to really pray about how you can give your family the gift of your face, because they need it in this world. They need us to have better communication skills. They need us to have those face-to-face conversations, to have deeper emotional connection. They need us to be aware of our nonverbal communication, how our tone, because how often do you hear that said? And that, to be fair, that's probably usually the women saying that more than the men. Well, it's not what you said, but it's how you said it, right? But it's true. It's how we delivered. And what they're saying is, I need to feel safe in this conversation. I need to trust you. I want to feel close to you. I want to feel seen and known and heard and respected. And we can create that safe environment for sharing. So here's some practical tips to think about. Set aside time each day for conversation with your family. Now, when we're looking back at this, at listening with your face, there are ways that you can do this. And one of the best ways is in your morning routine or in your bedtime routine. This is a great time for me to listen with my face. I love to go to my kids at night, to not bring my phone in there as a distraction, and to, you know, really convey to them, hey, I've got nothing more important on my plate than you. Now, in the back of my mind, I think, yeah, but I've got to do this and this and this, and I got to do the laundry and, you know, get ready for tomorrow and all of that. But really communicating to them, there's nothing more important than right now, because otherwise you just have this ongoing conflict that is unresolved. And do you want that? Or do you want it to be better? You choose where you put your effort. You can put your effort into constantly managing conflict and unhealthy communication, or you can put your effort into working on you. Now, a lot of times, well, what I hear is, but this, but my teen is disrespectful, but my spouse doesn't, you know, understand, or but my spouse is wrong about this, or, you know, but this and this and this. Well, you can only change you. And I just encourage you to try it out, to try listening with your face and see where it goes. See what happens. See what kind of change might happen. Maybe that's over your family dinner. We're going to talk about tech habits later on in the summer, but maybe that's your family dinner where you're sitting down, you put your phones away. Some research about phone snubbing or fubbing shows that even the presence of a phone during dinner can actually impact our digestion. because it increases stress level. So maybe that's at family dinner. Maybe that's last week where we talked about with weekly check-in. And sometimes it can be hard to have those face-to-face conversations. So start out with some side-by-side conversations. Start out going for a walk or going for a drive and just doing something, serving together. Maybe that's working in the garden. Maybe that is, that would definitely not be me, by the way, because that is not my spiritual gift. But maybe it's fishing or doing something like that. Think about listening with your face. What can you do to reaffirm that importance that you are the most important person in the world to me? You are the one I want to spend quality time with. What are the nonverbal ways that you can communicate affection and care and support? Recognize when you're distracted by your phone, when you're not listening with your face, and say, hey, I'm sorry, I'm not listening with my face. You deserve my full attention. Let me put this away. If there's something that you really have to do, tell them, this is really important. I need to give you my full face when I'm talking to you about this. Can we set a time in 15 minutes? Let me finish this task, and then I will give you my full attention. That might be helping. But I really want to ask you, are you willing to disconnect from distractions? Are you willing to do that and to connect with your family, with your face, to build stronger and more meaningful connections with your loved ones? What changes can you make today to engage in those meaningful conversations, to have that face-to-face communication, making an intentional effort to be fully present? You can do it, and it is one of the greatest gifts that you could give your family in a world that's going by so quickly, seeing them, knowing them, loving them. And I pray that as you do that, the Lord will bless you and keep you and make His face shine upon you and be gracious to you. And I'll see you again here on Monday. I hope you have a great weekend.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.